Good evening, this is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720.
Good evening, this is Milton Rosenberg. We welcome you again to Extension 720.
Good evening, this is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720. Hello to all, this is Milton Rosenberg.
We'll talk about that tonight on Extension 720.
Good evening. It is Extension 720. Justin Kaufman is out tonight. I'm Brian Noonan sitting in. I would tell you where Justin is, but HIPAA rules and the Federal Witness Protection Guidelines say that I can't. Now, if Pete wants to do it, that's fine, because Justin and Pete can deal with it. I will say this. Justin will be back with you next week. All will be well, and Justin will be back. But for tonight, I am here until 10 o'clock, and I couldn't be more excited not only to be here working with Pete Zimmerman, the wonderful, legendary producer who, it seemed, any time I filled in on this shift, was always mysteriously gone. But tonight was so last minute, Pete could not find an excuse not to be here. So I am excited to be here with Pete and to be in for Justin and to be broadcasting actually under the umbrella of the Extension 720 name, which to me is a wonderful thing. We have a great show planned, 312-981-7200, because the show is always more fun when you are involved. That's the number. When you call in, you will be talking to Pete Zimmerman. He's the executive producer of the big broadcast. If you're nice to him, you get to me. That's how it works. You can also text us on that number and keep up via social media at Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. I was talking about the weight of the Extension 720 name, and I know when Justin took over this, he said the same thing. It was an honor to use that name. I don't equate myself with Justin or Milt Rosenberg in any way, shape, or form, because when I started here at WGN, probably one of the most intimidating forces on this station was Milt Rosenberg. And he and Orion Samuelson. And I told Orion the first day I met him how intimidated I was, which made Orion laugh hysterically. He could not understand why anyone would be intimidated by him. And I said, well, the fact that you're in the Hall of Fame, you've been here forever, you are a voice that's known throughout the world, but mostly in Chicago and the Midwest, everybody knows who you are. It might be a little, turn out, one of the nicest guys ever. And it's always been a pleasure. Milt Rosenberg was, and this is a little behind the scenes, but if you listened to Extension 720 back in the day, Milt came in and he had an office that was filled with about, and I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say 1,000,006 books. There were books stacked on top of books in the old building, and there was stuff everywhere. And he would come in early and sequester himself in his office, and you would hear opera music coming from it. Now, at that, there was a point where I was doing this time slot, but we were doing a sports show. And so we would have to crosstalk, because Milt Rosenberg did not do crosstalk. Because he wouldn't, why would he, you know, we were talking about sports and goofiness. He was going to talk to an astrophysicist about the generation of the universe. So he didn't have time to come in and talk X's and O's with us. But we would pass in the hall, and at first, again, I was very intimidated by him, because he was a formidable man in size and in demeanor. And then the longer I was here and the longer we started passing each other, we became cordial. And he said, I won't share this part because to me it's a little personal nugget for me, which I know you're thinking, you share everything, why wouldn't you tell us this? But Milt Rosenberg said one of the nicest things to me ever, and I felt close to him prior to that, and then he said that, and I was like, first of all, he didn't have to say it. There was no, you know, we weren't in a conversation where something would have come up like for him to make these comments. But he did, and it, you know, it was great. So to just hear his voice before my voice, first of all, what a juxtaposition of mental agility. And then, you know, for me, it's just a big thing. So it's good to be here, Pete. Hi, how are you? now that I'm done babbling like a goofball and a fanboy for a few minutes,
we still get books addressed to Milt Rosenberg.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you here when he was still here?
No.
The old office missed. At Tribune Tower, when we were still on the first floor,
mm-hmm.
When I say it was filled, I'm not exaggerating. It was, imagine Mr. Peabody's closet, and when you open the door, there was a giant desk, and books just came rolling out.
Yeah.
And that was basically it. There was a radio that played classical music and books. And, you know, The guy was a monster. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable presence. So, you doing all right tonight? Everything good? We're not, I was right. Justin is in undisclosed location doing undisclosed things.
Yep.
But he will be back on Monday.
He will be back on Monday.
Fantastic.
Fingers crossed.
Good. I got my flu shot today. I don't know if you've been... If you were like old me, you're probably poo-pooing that. I don't need to get a flu shot. I have been, the last few years, I've decided I'm going to believe the PR. I'm going to believe the World Health Organization. I'm going to believe the CDC. And I'm going to get myself that flu shot. Plus, I've been substitute teaching a little bit, and I'm around children. And if you're around children at all, you know children are... vile and disgusting. While they grow into wonderful creatures, and for the most part, they're nice. And when I say they're vile and disgusting, it's only in their hygiene practices. Because young children have no hygiene practices. They are basically an oscillating sprinkler of phlegm and snot and everything else. You can't be around them without having, for any period of time, without having some of their bodily fluids land on you. And the first year I subbed, I was like, I don't really need a flu shot. And then I saw teachers dropping like flies throughout the year. Because one kid comes in, and if you have kids in school or a kid in daycare, you know this. One kid gets sick, forget about it. Everybody in the class is getting sick. Then they bring it into your house, and they're like patient zero at the dining room table. So they're sick, then they get you sick, then dad gets sick, then the siblings get sick, then the dogs get the runs, and everybody, it just turns into a whole thing. So I went today and got the flu shot. I have to say, I have never gotten an injection as painless as the one this nurse technician gave me today. She said, oh, hang on, there's going to be a little pinch, and then we're done. And I said, wait, you told me there was no pinch. Unless I've got, nerve damage and I can't feel a needle go into me. Or she didn't really give me the shot.
Oh.
So, some revenue-generating ruse where they go, oh, yeah, it's all done.
What prevented you from getting the flu shot initially? Were you just thinking, like, you're healthy,
yeah,
young?
Back in the day when I was younger, I was just like, I'm not... I rarely, and I still try... Well, less now. I never went to the doctor. It was, it was not that fake machismo. Yeah, but not so much that. It was just I treat my body like I treat my car. I don't take it in for preventative maintenance. I only take it in when something's broken. And so that's it, now that I'm older, that philosophy is out the window. But that's why it was. It wasn't. I didn't believe. And we're going to get in after the break. I've got some myths because that's the thing. People say, I'm going to get the flu because I got the flu shot, and I'm going to do all that. It was never that. It was a combination of sloth and denial. Which basically has been how I led my whole life. So I just didn't think I was going to get sick. And honestly, I don't remember the last time I got the flu. So even when I wasn't getting the shot, maybe I just wasn't around it. And then I got paranoid as I got older. And I started to... And I don't remember the press for flu shots being as intense as it is now. Even back 5-10 years ago, it was, flu shots are here. You should get a flu shot. And then as the years have progressed, it's, you really need to get a flu shot. It's a matter of life and death. Mm-hmm. And the news reports leading with X amount of people have died this year from the flu. And at some point you go, all right, why tempt fate? It's time to go in. I got insurance. I'll go in. They'll pop me and we'll move.
It seems like now that if you don't get one, you're almost akin to an anti-vaxxer.
Yes, that is exactly right. And those people are, I think, I will agree with my own statement, they're nuts. So I have no desire to be in that group. We got my daughter vaccinated. Thank God everything was fine because, really, there's no reason not to if you read the actual science and not listen to Jenny McCarthy, which... I know a lot of people will say, Brian, when I'm looking for health advice, I go to the woman from Singled Out. I go to a naked former Mother Macaulay student. That's who I want to get my health news from. I prefer going to licensed physicians, scientists, clinicians who have done broad studies. So I always got we got our daughter vaccinated. I get vaccinated. My wife is now on me because she went in for a physical and they gave her a tetanus shot. And she was like, she didn't cut herself or anything. I don't know exactly why the tetanus shot came up, but the doctor said, when was your last tetanus shot?
And I would ask you the same thing, Pete. That's a question they always ask you. I never know.
No.
Never know. I couldn't tell you what my last tetanus shot was. I know I've had them, but it's got to be well over a decade. So she said, oh, you know, you should go get one. I said, why? Well, because they said, it's coming back. Tetanus is coming back. What do you mean tetanus is coming back? I don't know if it's from all the indoor axe throwing places. I don't know if people are playing with rusty nails in the street, but somehow tetanus is coming back. The other thing she terrified me was they told her she might have to get another, the MMR, the measles, mumps, rubella shot, because if you're over a certain age and you've lived long enough, sometimes that vaccine begins to wane.
Oh.
So I know I was vaccinated as a child. I assume you were as well. Mm-hmm. I'm much older than you because you're a spry 18 years old. it starts to, dissipate a little bit. So it's not as potent. And now with all the anti-vaxxers running around and letting their kids get measles and go and infect everybody, who knows?
I mean, you should have done is... Luckily, I've been in radio for a while,
yeah.
And for some reason, I've always been on a show that has gotten flu shots.
Oh, did the flu shots?
So that's how I've become a flu shot proponent. Is
there you
because
go. For radio,
a doctor always came in and gave us one. I was
sure,
like, yeah, I'll get one.
Yeah, you're here. You might as well get one. Yeah. Why not? No, had I known I was coming in earlier, I would have called you and said, hey, you know what? I was supposed to stop and get a flu shot, but if you could book us a doctor, that would be great. But, on short notice, what kind of doctor are we going to get? Some guy giving, flu shots from the back of his car? Yeah, I got a trunk load of them. Really? How old are they? Doesn't matter. The flu's the flu. All right. Yeah, he's giving us swine flu shots, some sort of veterinary vaccines. I don't want to get involved in that. All right, let's take a quick break. I mentioned that I have some myths to dispel. If you're worried about getting the flu vaccine, we'll get into that. It's Extension 720. Brian Noonan in for Justin Kaufman on 720 WGN. Brian Noonan in for Justin Kaufman on Extension 720 here until 10 o'clock. All right, we were talking about the flu shot and why you should get one. And don't be afraid and don't listen to other people. The World Health Organization has addressed the myths about the flu vaccine because we've all heard them. I'm going to get sick if I get the flu shot and blah, blah, blah. The only weird thing that I've seen this year is my wife got her flu shot and the area around the injection point got really hard. That's something new. You're nodding, Pete. Is that have you had that happen?
Well, my wife got one as well.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for the radio bit to come. So, so I still haven't received
you haven't booked a doctor yet?
Yes.
It's late in the season. You should have done this in September.
and she said that her arm was really sore
okay.
with this one.
That's my daughter said that about hers. I talked to her today, and she said hers was sore, but my wife's was like there was a little stone in there, a little rock. Nothing's happened to me so far, but if I drop during the program, you'll know what that is. That's the only thing I'm on today is flu vaccine.
I got mine yesterday.
Did you? How are you feeling?
Fine.
All right. You look good. I noticed your left arm was drooping a little.
No, it was not.
Okay. I'm just checking.
It's not sore, nothing.
All right. Well, I'm hoping.
Good.
Listen, at some point, I'd rather have a sore arm for a day than be bedridden with the flu, because I'm a horrible patient. World Health Organization, the myth, influenza is not serious, so I don't need to get a vaccine. We know that's wrong. As many as 650,000 people a year can die from the flu. That only represents respiratory deaths, so the likely impact is even higher. The biggest myth, myth two, the flu vaccine can give me the flu. Fact, the injected flu vaccine contains an inactivated virus that cannot give you influenza. Repeating, it cannot give you influenza. If you feel achy or slightly feverish, it is a normal reaction of the immune system. So again, you cannot. Now, I know there's people who are going to be texting in. No, you can't get the flu. All right. I'm not going to trust a random texter over the World Health Organization. No offense, random texters. I have your number. I'll call you back. We can discuss it all day. But no, I'm not going to believe you. Myth three, the flu vaccine can cause severe side effects. It is proven to be safe. Severe side effects are extremely rare. One in a million people may get Guillain-Barré syndrome, which causes muscle weakness or paralysis. That's why they asked me that today, if I've ever had Guillain-Barré. I said no. They asked me if I was allergic to eggs. I said no. And then they, right in there. That's it. I've had the vaccine. I've had the vaccine and still got the flu, so it doesn't work. Well, that's because, of course, there are many strains of the flu, and they create the vaccine to go against the most common strains that are predicted for the year. So sometimes, yes, if you're an exotic locale or you're, you know, you may get a strain of the flu that was not covered by this year's injections. But the, you know, the vaccine is there. I am pregnant, so I shouldn't get the flu vaccine. Pregnant women should especially get the flu vaccine. Again, that's not me. This is the World Health Organization telling you this. Since their immune systems are weaker than usual, the inactivated flu vaccine is safe at any stage of pregnancy. So there you go. All the myths debunked. That's what I do here. Now, I'll spread disinformation on other topics. Don't worry about it. I'm not, you know, I'm not a paragon of journalistic virtue, but this is a serious thing because you don't want, first of all, you don't want to get the flu. Second of all, if you're like me, as empathetic as you are to other human beings, it has a limit. And somebody whining with the flu for a week, that's like 4 days past my limit. I'll nurse somebody back to health for three days tops. On the fourth day, I don't know, I got to get a hotel. I can't be hanging around. I just, there's that. So, Pete, you better get your vaccine because I don't know how long your lovely wife, I don't know what her threshold is for personal care, but you don't want to risk it. All right, let's do this. Then it's news time, WGN. Thank you, David. It's Friday night. It's Extension 720. I, unfortunately, am not Justin Kaufman. Justin Kaufman is off tonight. It's Brian Noonan in with you until 10 o'clock, 312-981-7200 if you want to get involved in the program, and we hope you do. One of the big stories that's been going on since last week, of course, the Chicago Teachers Union strike against CPS. Things got a little crazy downtown today. Another march, but this one was huge. According to Ryan Burrow from the WGN newsroom, he was out there earlier. He said he estimated about 10,000 teachers out of the 25,000 teachers that are in the Chicago Teachers Union. It came down. The police stopped them as they were going to try to take over Lakeshore Drive. The march turned around. So a huge show of force from the teachers union today. After the march this evening, and you heard David report on some of this, Jesse Sharkey, the president of the CTU, came out and he made a statement. He said, quote, when you're down to a small number of issues, it's usually the issues both sides hold on to most dear, end quote. They're hoping, they say, to get everything done so that classes can resume on Monday. They're going to be working hard over the weekend. He was asked straight up by the reporters, what's the likelihood of school starting next week? And he said, quote, it's what we want. Obviously, our members want to be back with our students. People are beginning to say, this is frustrating. Why can't we land this? He said, it's stressful. The pressure, the students, parents, our members are all counting on us to deliver. This strike has now tied the length of the last teacher strike. So things are dire. If you've got a kid in school, you've been trying to figure out for the last, when did they start? Last Thursday or Friday was the first day. So six or seven days, you've been trying to figure out what to do with your children when they're not in school. And we all know that children not in school are up to nothing. Nothing. They're watching The Price is Right, watching horrible daytime TV. They're trying to figure out who's the daddy. They don't know. They're in second grade. They don't need to be watching Maury Povich all day. They need to be in school learning stuff. But they're out there. They're working. The union president, Jesse Sharkey, said they will be working hard all weekend. They have made some things. They got the class size settled on in writing. They had a few other pretty big stumbling blocks that got signed in. Everything was starting to look good, but there's still a few more things. And we know that when it comes to union and city negotiations, even when you think you're very, very close, sometimes doesn't always work out. One of the things that came out of the march today, and it has caused, as most things that start out on social media and go viral do, it has caused a little bit of controversy. I want to know, after we listen to this, I want to know where you think the level of controversy should be. And we'll talk about it a little bit. So a Chicago police commander named Michael, it's Pigott. So Pigott or Peugeot, something. I'm unsure of the pronunciation. I don't want to ruin it. But anyway, there was a standoff. Chicago police were blocking protesters from going on to Lakeshore Drive, which, while I think was a good move today, that doesn't mean I don't think people should be able to march. I'm all for marching. I'm all for civil disobedience when it's law-abiding and, you know, everybody's safe. However, I think it was in the teacher's best interest that they didn't get onto Lakeshore Drive. Because, let's be honest, in any strike, while public opinion is not what's going to get the deal done, public opinion does weigh into the decision process. The mayor is going to, while, you know, the mayor's going to look and say, oh, well, boy, the public really wants the teachers back. And let's find a way. You know, it may not change the bottom line, but it may spur negotiations along a little more. And I think if you're, whether you're the teachers, whether you're the, you know, city workers, whether you're Black Lives Matter, whoever you are and you're taking your protest and you really screw people up on Friday afternoon, you're not, I don't care how much they back your cause, they're going to take a step back. And before you tell me, listen, isn't civil disobedience, aren't marches supposed to disrupt things and make people uncomfortable? Yes. But this is a city issue. And if you start blocking Lakeshore Drive on a Friday afternoon commute, you're messing with a lot of people who have no skin in the city game. They don't live in the city. They may just work in the city and be going home. They may be just visiting the city. They may be retired and have already paid their taxes for where their kids went to school. They're not involved, and you would turn the public opinion against you. So anyway, they're trying to get onto Lakeshore Drive. And this police commissioner, or police commander, rather, is standing there, and he starts talking to some of the protesters, and he said this.
There, they go to the bridge. I've been telling you for half an hour, no ifs, ands, or buts. If you want to march north, I gave you a safe route that I can protect. If you go otherwise, you all saw Charlottesville. If someone hurts you, that's on you. I cannot protect you. So that's non-negotiable.
All right. Now, as you can imagine, the part of that comment that raised people's eyebrows was Charlottesville. Now, listen, we all know what happened in Charlottesville. It was a horrible tragedy. And most of us, while we respect people's rights to have their opinion, and I do believe that if you protect somebody's right to speak and protest that you believe in, you have to protect the right of the people that you completely disagree with, which is, you know, the case in Charlottesville. The guys carrying the torches and the red shirts, I didn't agree with them. They have a right to protest. But I don't think what this commander said was so far out of line. I think his point was, listen, and he said it straight out. I can protect you if you stay on this safe route. You're still on the street. The march still was going to have an impact. If you cross into this busy, multi-lane road, I can't protect you. Now, Charlottesville, the accident was not an accident. The accident was the homicide of that young woman, the killing of her, was a deliberate act by someone in a car. That's where his comment was off. Because I don't think anybody's going to be so angry at a teacher that they're going to try to run them over. I was frustrated with some of my teachers in the past, but that was mostly because my effort did not culminate in the grade that I hoped for. But I don't think any of us would be. Now, listen, I get frustrated if I sit behind somebody who misses a light on Lakeshore Drive because they're looking at their phone, but not mad enough to run them over. So I'm really not going to get mad enough to run a teacher over. So that's where his comment went off the rails and people got upset. But I don't think, you know, some people were trying to make it into a racial thing. And I really don't think that was the case. Because if you look at the rank and file of the CTU, it is a multicultural portrait of the city. Every race, every men, women, people who identify as whatever it is they identify as, Hispanic, Black, White, Asian, everybody is in the CTU. So I don't think we need to get as upset about this comment as some people were getting. Now, of course, then because of the little uproar, the police department had to come out. They made a statement. They said, quote, the Chicago Police Department supports and encourages all Chicagoans to exercise their First Amendment rights. We remain committed to ensuring demonstrators can express their opinions in a safe and responsible manner within the boundaries of the law. Commander Michael Peugeot's Charlottesville reference was in relation to any potential vehicular threats to the teachers, as officers were not in position to provide safety from oncoming traffic along Lakeshore Drive, end quote. And that should be the end of that. And I hope it is, because really that's all that it was meant to be. Pete, what do you agree with any of that? Disagree?
I think I'm with you on this one. I think Charlottesville bringing that up is a poor choice of words.
Yeah, bad choice of words. But nothing. I don't think it was meant to incite anything. It wasn't meant as a denouncement or an endorsement of what happened in Charlottesville, or telling the teachers not to be out there. He told them straight up, "I've given you a route that is safe. We cannot." And you know, sometimes we make comments in the heat of the moment, when our intentions are one thing, but it comes out and then you go, how many times have you said something like, oh, I wish I'd worded that a little bit different? Only because the intent was there. The message is pure, you know, pure meaning there wasn't any other sort of underlying bias to it, but the wording was bad. And, you know, if you're a commander and you've got 10,000 people marching and you're trying to coordinate everything that's going on, you've got a lot on your mind. And we would like to think that everybody makes perfect choices all the time when they open their mouth. You can attest to the fact that I don't do it. I know I don't do it. Most people don't. Most of the time, people will say something at some point and wish they had a do-over. And I'm sure this commander wishes he had a do-over, but his point was, if you go out there, you could get hit by a car. And something bad is going to happen, and I can't protect you. And that's it. Let's see what the cop said was highly inappropriate. That is from the 217. Curious, don't live in Chicago. Is there any way to get rid of ineffective teachers? Well, sure, the teachers have to go. The teachers are always reviewed. There is a way once you get tenure, it is harder for you to get fired as a teacher. My father was a high school principal at CPS. My mom was a CPS teacher. And I remember listening to him lament the fact that there was a teacher at his school that was awful. And the amount of work that had to be done and data that had to be collected and time that had to be taken for that teacher to be removed was rough. Now, does that mean that the union shouldn't have protections in there for its teachers? No. But I think at some point that's something you have to look at too and go, all right, obviously we want our teachers to have tenure. But there has to be a little clearer and a little more expeditious guideline for how to remove a teacher who, for whatever reason, gets burned out or just has slipped through the cracks, maybe hasn't continued their education or polishing their skills or is just out of touch with the student body anymore. And that happens. Listen, it happens in every job. People get burned out. And you can see, if you spend any time near a school, you'll see how hard it is to be in a classroom every day. Now, that doesn't mean it's harder than other jobs. It just means it's a hard job. So there are people who, after a certain point, probably shouldn't be doing this job anymore. But you know, they're trying to get to their pension and they have tenure, so they can ride it out. And that's not always, it's never productive for the kids. And it's not productive, again, if you look at for public opinion, it's not great for that either. 312-981-7200, that's the phone, that's the text. If you want to jump in, I would love to hear from you. It's Brian Noonan in for Justin on 720 WGN. Brian Noonan on Extension 720. Justin's off tonight. He will be back with you next week. We're talking about the teacher strike, which has gone in and now tied the length of the last strike. We are heading out. It's the last major strike was in 2012, and we are looking at possibly no classes again on Monday. The union and the city are both saying, listen, we're going to be negotiating all weekend. We're going to be at the table. We hope things get done. We were talking about the Charlottesville reference that one commander made and how that seems to have gotten blown in out of proportion a little bit. But I wanted to hear from you what you think about this. John is in Crystal Lake. Hi, John. You're on WGN.
Hey, Brian, great discussion tonight.
Thank you.
Wanted to just jump in with a little bit of clarification. I'm not sure how long ago your parents were administrators at a school district, but tenure doesn't necessarily mean for us teachers what it once did.
Okay. So go ahead.
Oh, so I was going to say, so tenure now, it has less to do with, you know, that you can't get fired over anything, and more to do with the frequency that you get reviewed in your job. So for me, before I got tenured, I was reviewed 3 times a year. Now that I have tenure, I get reviewed every other year for my performance. So,
okay.
That's still something that, you know, we are required to do our job well. It's just
good
how long we go in between those performance reviews. And if we are doing poorly, then, you know, your protection depends on your contract, obviously. But they do have plans and things in place to try and get you to be better at your job. But ultimately, if you're not good, then you go.
Well, that's how it is everywhere else. So it should be that same way if you're a teacher. And yeah, it's been a while since, you know, since my dad was a principal. He's gone. He's been gone for a while, so it's been a little while. But so that I'm sure things have changed a little bit. John, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Franklin is a CPS parent. Hi, Franklin. How are you?
I'm doing good. The problem that I have with CPS right now is that these classes are very overcrowded.
Yes. Well, that's one of the top one of the top things that the union is striking about is class size.
Right, and the biggest problem with the class is that being that it's so overcrowded, these kids have no respect for these teachers. They're constantly on their phones, and they don't get off them. And the teachers can't do their job, which is teach, because of the overcrowded and because of the disrespect.
If you have 40 kids in a classroom, there is absolutely no way that you can give individual attention to any one student. The kids who really need your help aren't going to get it. Crowd management is going to be the biggest issue because you get 40 kindergartners, eighth graders, high school seniors in a room. It's a monumental task to just get their attention for a minute, let alone for 35 minutes or 40 minutes or whatever it is that class length is. So you have to get those classes smaller just so the kids can learn. I mean, it's not because these teachers don't want to do their job. They can't do their job in a class that is that crowded. There is absolutely no way. Franklin, I appreciate the call. Pete brought this up to me off the air. I had seen a story, and you might have seen it as well, of teachers who were protesting being spit on by people outside the Board of Trade. Now, one, I don't understand it. I don't. What point does that make? But I have seen, listen, there's something about teachers that a number of people will, they get very upset at teachers. They think teachers have it made. Oh, they get the summers off. They don't pay Social Security. Yeah, but they don't get benefits from Social Security. Relax. But there's, I don't know if people had a really bad scholastic experience, but there's something about when teachers go on strike, people think they shouldn't. They should just shut up. They pick that job. No, they don't really have that feeling when other unions go on strike. They want the strikes to end so their garbage gets picked up or the police are back on the job. But there's not an open hostility that I see when teachers go on strike. And to spit on people who are picketing, you know, and I don't know if it was Board of Trade employees. We I don't know who it was that was spitting. But so what are you doing? What purpose does that serve? And so that goes back to, you know, and Pete, you made this good point that maybe, you know, suddenly the Charlottesville thing, while not equal to what happened there, you're talking about safety. And that's what the commander was saying when he was telling people not to go out on Lakeshore Drive, because it's not safe. We can't protect you. And he did. He used the word safety and he used the word protect. That's what that comment was about. All right, on the other side of the news, we'll talk another very interesting study about what's going on in the city in communities that are plagued by violence. We'll talk about that, and then we've got some Halloween stuff coming up. It's all happening right here, WGN. Thank you, David. Extension 720 on WGN. Justin Kaufman is off tonight. I'm Brian Noonan. I'll be here till 10 o'clock. Then who's coming in? I don't even know who's coming in on Nightside tonight. I should have looked at the schedule. Somebody fascinating, I'm sure. We'll find out. Either way, stay here. That's all you need to do. You don't need to worry about it. You don't need to go anywhere. Just listen and hang out. All right, we were talking about the strike And one of the things that came out this evening was a judge, and you've been hearing this reported here, a judge denied an injunction request on Friday brought by a group of student athletes that filed a lawsuit against the Illinois High School Association, IHSA, and the Chicago Public Schools to compete in state tournaments in the Chicago teachers' strike all week long. Cross-country athletes from Jones College Prep. That is a sport that I could never have competed in, one, because I couldn't run. I was probably not much smaller than this in high school, but I was not in the best shape. I was not a runner, and I would see these cross-country athletes, and they're in incredible shape, but they always look like they were almost about to die because they've run through woods and up mountains, and they were chased by billy goats, and they never looked happy. You know, football players look tired, but they, you know, they would smile sometimes. Baseball players are just, you know, they're just languishing out in the field, taking their time. But man, cross country runners, they just always looked beaten down because they've been running for hours and hours across terrain. But anyway, it's a legit sport, and these people are elite athletes. And well, maybe not in high school, they're not elite. There's probably a couple of elite ones in high school. Some are just, you know, people who can run. For whether they were used to being chased, whatever it was in their past that made them able to run long distances over crazy terrain, God bless them. But anyway, the cross-country athletes from Jones College Prep have been saying how upset they were that they'd potentially be kept out of IHSA competitions because of the teachers' strike. Some are concerned that the tournament would have been their best chance at potentially getting athletic scholarships, which is a valid point. But it's one of those things where I think for a lot of athletes who are at the level where they're pretty sure they're going to get scholarships, those athletes have a lot of videotape. And most parents are taping their student athletes anyway. So you have some sort of footage. And most schools who know they have, you know, even smaller schools can spot an athlete and go, this person has the ability to, you know, if we work, we can get this kid a scholarship. We can get them to the next level and save them some money. So the coaches and the athletic department, it's nothing like, you know, the Heisman campaigns in college, but they're keeping some tape on these kids. Now, if you're on the bubble, yeah, you definitely need these final, you know, senior year events to push your stock up, even to get a partial scholarship somewhere. You need it. Well, the judge said that if a temporary injunction was granted, schools would have been forced to open their doors without adequate staffing. Student safety could be at risk if buildings were opened without staff members. The CPS, of course, is blaming the IHSA. CEO Dr. Janice Jackson said, quote, "We're not using our kids as a pawn in this whole strike debate. IHSA rules clearly state we need 51% of our students in attendance in order to be an operating district, and therefore we can't participate because of the shortage." And, you know, if you don't have a kid, one, if you don't have a kid in CPS, you're probably not noticing this. If your children are not athletes in CPS, this is probably not a big deal to you. But listen, there's kids who get debate scholarships. There's kids who get theater scholarships. There's kids who get academic scholarships. Now, most schools are going to take into account if you were on strike. And listen, if you're getting a scholarship, a week isn't going to be enough to throw that off. If you've worked for 4 years and have an academic record that is worthy of a scholarship, no school is going to go, "But in October, they missed 7 days." Well, were they playing hooky? No, there was a teacher strike. Okay, well, do people even play hooky anymore? Is that even a term? What is this, 1957, and I'm going to be down on the corner with a garbage can on fire singing doo-wop songs with my friends, hoping Officer Krupke doesn't come and pick me up? Sometimes I love to use terms that people just shake their heads. Yeah, are you old enough to remember what hooky is, Pete? Do you know what I mean by that? Now it's truancy. I think there's truant officers. Or probably not. Probably in this feel-good age, it's, you know, we have to make sure that we want inclusion officers to go and make sure all children are included in the educational process. Truancy is such a negative label. and it enforces the feeling of inadequacy that will allow a child not to come back to school. And hooky just sounds too much like hookers and cookies. And we don't want to, one, promote, you know, that sort of adult trade. And also unhealthy eating is not good either. So hookers and cookies, we can't combine that. So we'll just call them inclusion officers and get them all to everybody to come to school. So good luck to these kids. I hope, listen, we all hope the strike ends soon so that these kids can get back to school and the football teams and the cross-country teams and the debate teams and the mock UNs and all the things that are in high schools that I completely avoided for 4 years. I hope those kids get back and get and are able to do that. I'm perusing the paper today, as I'm wont to do when I know I'm going to be talking to you. And I came across this story, which, you know, I don't live in a neighborhood that is in Chicago that is very violent. There's violence around it, like there is pretty much in every neighborhood in Chicago. But, you know, it's not, I don't worry about going outside. I don't worry about walking the dogs. You know, it's just a regular working class neighborhood. I've got neighbors, all kinds of neighbors doing all kinds of things. Old people, people with little kids. It's just a regular old neighborhood. But thankfully, we're not plagued by violence. But some of the neighborhoods, as you know, in Chicago definitely are. Well, there's a new study, two recent studies that came out of University of Chicago. That basically, if you boil it down to the nitty-gritty of it, say that people who are in communities that are very violent are very lonely. And people who have experienced violence in their own community are extremely lonely because the trauma of the loneliness stays with them. And they're afraid to go out of the house. They're afraid to walk around their neighborhood. So they become more and more isolated. And this is across all ages and both sexes in these neighborhoods. And it's tied kind of to post-traumatic stress disorder. Because if you go through a violent act, you have this, you know, this fear, and it keeps coming back to you. And things will trigger the feelings that you had when you were going through your traumatic event. So violence leads to loneliness, and that can lead to higher mortality. That's the one study. Then, and these are from started out as just patients talking to the doctor, and then it developed into in-person surveys of more than 500 adults living in the South and West Side communities with high rates of violent crime, and in predominantly racial and ethnic minority groups. The second study, and this, I think, can it's centered in these neighborhoods, but it could be said of anybody who lives in a major city. Hypervigilance also can lead to horrible health conditions like hypertension, cardiovascular disease, memory implant, and anxiety disorders. Now, think about it. If you live in the city, no matter what neighborhood you walk out, your head's always on a swivel, unless you're, you know, one of these goofballs who's walking around with their head in their phone and they're not paying attention and they're just begging to be a victim of crime. But most of us, when we go out, you got to watch for cars. You got to watch for scooters. You have to watch for bikes. You have to watch for wild dogs. You have to watch for people walking around. There's a lot going on. So when you're outside, there's not a lot of time to just relax unless you get to a park or you get to the lake and you can sit down for a couple minutes and just take a breath. But we're moving all the time. We are hypervigilant. My daughter now lives in Manhattan, and she is constantly on alert. You know, that's just part of life. It's not being paranoid. It's not trying to, make something out of nothing, but it happens. Now, you seem very – you're not hyper – are you hypervigilant, Pete? You seem calm all the time.
I am hypervigilant, though. I take the CTA home, and we get out of here pretty late. Usually on the train at midnight. When I'm walking from the train to my house, I'm never looking at my phone.
No, you can't be.
I don't have my headphones in. I am I'm just looking around. I'm just paying attention.
You're alert to what's happening around you.
Am I worried that something's going to happen? No.
See, that's the difference. Sometimes when people hear, oh, I'm being hypervigilant, they think, what are you scared of? I'm not scared of anything. But I also live in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the world sometimes cannot be the most accommodating place, that bad things can happen. Does that mean they will? Nah, maybe not. Some of us go through, you know, we might go through our whole lives without ever having to be a victim of violence. That would be the hope for all of us. Unfortunately, that's not the case. But I think I'm like you. If I'm walking from the building late at night, whether I'm going to a parking garage, whether I'm going to the train, whatever it is, I'm looking around. Not because I'm anticipating that every garbage can has somebody hiding behind it, or every doorway somebody's going to leap out, or some car is going to jump the curb. But if something does, I want to see it coming. You know,
yeah.
I don't know what I do, but I want to see it coming. So I can make peace with my God before everything ends. That's really what I want to do. 312-981-7200. I wonder, if you live in a neighborhood that's a little bit sketchy, or if you've been, you could have been the victim of violence in any neighborhood. It doesn't matter. Have you noticed that, you know what, since this happened, whether you were mugged or you had your wallet stolen or something worse happened, and you don't have to give us the details. We don't, you know, this is not some lurid peep show. You can just tell us, yes, I was the victim of something, and, well, I immediately went back to how I used to live, and everything was okay, and I think about it a little. Or are you listening to these statistics or the results of this study and saying, you know what, yeah, this, I have become more isolated. I have started to withdraw, and it's making me very lonely. And listen, we'll talk a little bit more about loneliness because a lot of statistics have come out. A lot of people, they say, are more lonely. And the younger generation, they're saying, is the loneliest generation to come along in a long time. And that's, they blame the experts, the people who've run the studies, blame technology for some of that. Because really, you can connect, and I use air quotes around connect, but you can connect with people without ever having to leave the house. We're on social media. I see people on social media that I haven't seen in years and years, or that are miles away, you know, across the country that I never talked to, but I feel connected, kinda, but am I really? 312-981-7200. Let's do this, then there's more. WGN. All right, we're talking about these two studies that came out from the University of Chicago. The first one said that people who experience violence in their community are lonelier, and they also can, because of this loneliness, it can lead to higher mortality. And the second said that people who are victims of violence in their community tend to be a little more, because of their hypervigilance, it leads to horrible health effects like hypertension, cardiovascular disease, memories, things like that. And I was wondering if you have been the victim of some sort of violence, if this has happened to you. It makes perfect sense. It makes sense that a lot of us, even if we're not victims of violent crime, that sometimes we may have that hypertension and things just from being hypervigilant living in today's society. Gwen's been hanging on. Hi, Gwen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was a victim of a robbery with a gun at my face down by the university hospital up the street from you guys.
Oh, geez.
After work, yes. But it's made me more and more vigilant. I didn't even have my cell phone in my hand, but I just, even before that, the first couple of days, it took me a couple of days to get over it. So, and I think my coworkers were more upset than I was. They were like, I would have did this, this, and this. And I'm like, no, I don't think you would have with a gun facing at you.
Yeah, it's easy to talk big until you're staring down the barrel of a gun. Then suddenly everything goes away, and that's all you see.
And then the only other frustrating thing was they had over there by the hospital. I don't know if you want me to say what hospital I'm at. I'm literally right off of Michigan and Erie.
Okay.
You know where.
I think we know.
Okay. So anyhow, just the gist of it, there was, I was heading back to the hospital, and there's one of these, they look like light poles, or blue and red, and they got a big button. It's just like a panic button for emergency. They just installed those, and I hit the button after these guys left, and they go, 911, what's your emergency? And I told them, they go, what's your location? And I'm thinking, oh, my God. Those poles were not identified with a location on them. So I should have called the news or somebody and say, hey, they just put these. But either way, it was an experience, and I tell people I bump into, I was like, don't even look at your phone.
You gotta stay alert. Gwen, I'm glad you weren't hurt and that you were able to move on from that. Thank you for the call. Yeah, Gwen's right, because I actually have had a gun pointed in my face, and you don't see anything else. You don't, and anybody who tells you, oh yeah, I would have done this, no, trust me. Until you've looked down the barrel of a gun, and Pete, you look incredulous. I will tell the story if you want after, because we got to get to your story of violence too. It ties into this, but yeah. So Gwen's absolutely right. All of her coworkers who said they would have done this and this and this. No, you know what you do? You freeze. You freeze, and you hope that you can do whatever they're telling you to do, and that they don't shoot you. That's your only hope. Is your only thought is please don't shoot me. On the other side of the news, we'll have a few more stories about the effects of violence, because Pete seems very unflappable until I said the sentence that I stared down the barrel of a gun and I thought his head was going to pop off. I was carjacked on Logan Square, August 2018, from a texter. Beat me up, took all my stuff. Now I carry my stuff with me everywhere I go. P.S. I had PTSD for a while. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then, should we all feel sympathy for Mitch Trubisky? We'll find out. It's 8:30. That means it's time for the news. Thank you, David. Brian Noonan in for Justin Kaufman on Extension 720. Justin will be back with you next week. He is taking the night off. And why shouldn't a man take a Friday night off? I'll come in. I got no problem with that. We were talking before the news about these two studies that came out from the University of Chicago. One saying that people who experience violence in their community become more lonely and more isolated because they're afraid to go out. And that loneliness can lead to higher mortality rates. The other study said that people who are hypervigilant because they live in neighborhoods that are very violent, they begin to experience health concerns like hypertension, cardiovascular disease, and things like that. And that's my contention is that in that study, I think that can be pretty much anybody who lives in an urban area, but you can understand South and West Side neighborhoods, like the ones that were included in this study, would have higher rates. Now, we were talking to people who, and if you want to jump in on this, 312-981-7200, we were asking people who had endured violence if they thought this was accurate. If after you were endured some sort of violence, did you become more isolated, more lonely? Did you think you were suffering from PTSD? And then Pete jumped in and he said, I have a story. When he was in fourth grade, a young Pete, maybe 10 years old in fourth grade, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, the whole world in front of you.
Right.
Everything's exciting. And then what happened?
We went on vacation.
See, that's a horrible story.
Yeah.
And I got car sick. And from then on, I had to take the bus.
And I don't remember a lot of vacations. And I don't think we took many vacations up until this point. So I think this was like the first vacation that we were gone for like a week.
All right.
We went to the Dells.
Oh, nice.
Something fancy.
Sure, yeah. Well, that's a big deal.
And then we came home. And my uncle was there. Now he was like, why is my uncle greeting us?
What's he doing at our house?
And so then he like talks to my parents, and it turns out we were robbed.
Oh,
Somebody broke into our home while we were on vacation, and my uncle had been staying there while we were gone.
Then, okay.
Like for the rest of the time. And we lived in the suburbs. We had one lock. You know, the thief just like hit the window, opened it up, and like opened up the door.
That's how it was.
And stole, you know, some jewelry. Nothing. Like the house wasn't empty by any stretch of the imagination. You could probably walk in and think nothing happened. Nothing was disheveled, really.
Until you went to watch Captain Kangaroo, and then things got all sideways.
My parents were telling us about it. I didn't really feel anything. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, somebody came in and took something, I guess. Yeah. But as time moved on, I realized that like I could not be alone at home in the house, and not that I was young, so I wasn't
sure.
home alone a lot.
Right, you weren't Macaulay Culkin.
Right. Yes. Like my parents would just leave me and go on vacation and go to New York.
Well, they have to leave somebody in the house now. People are breaking in willy nilly.
So, for at least two years. If my mom was just running to the grocery store or doing some kind of errand where I could be home for 10 minutes, I would say, no, I have to go.
Really?
I have to go with you and sit in the car. If dropping off my sister to a game or something, I would have to go with. I could not be at home alone. And I don't even remember how it resolved itself. I never went to therapy. Like,
okay, yeah, you didn't go. You didn't go see somebody.
No, my parents just suck it up. You know, you'll get over it.
Yeah, rub dirt on it. You'll be fine.
Right, exactly. That's all,
you don't have to worry about. Yeah. That makes perfect sense, though, because all of it for the not having a lot of feelings when you're first told about it, because you're 10, you don't burglary of that. It doesn't. But the more then you get to think about it, and you see, oh well, now this means. Somebody took something from us. They were in our house when they weren't supposed. So as a little kid, that makes sense. And then the connection of, well, this happens when nobody's home.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to be the only one here. That all makes perfect sense. It would be interesting to find out how, you know, if you uncover this memory somewhere down the road.
Yeah.
How the one day you just went, yeah, go. I'm staying here.
Yeah, I don't know. I do not remember.
You got a better TV and you didn't want to leave. That was it. Well, see, burglaries are, if a property crime like that, it has leaves a different effect. I had my car broken into once, which is nowhere near like a house, but it's more of a violation feeling than a fear. Like, I wasn't afraid then that somebody was going to break into my car every time I locked mm-hmm. the car. It was a bad timing, a bad experience. I wasn't harmed, so it was just a violation. But to have it in your house where you sleep, that takes it to another level, and because that's where you go to be safe.
Yeah.
And if all of a sudden you're not safe anymore, well, that throws a little kid's mind all into a tizzy.
Yeah. I don't think anybody was ever caught. Or yeah, not that I know of. Maybe it was, and nobody ever told me it right. was.
You weren't following the case on the no. court TV?
But I do remember being in the house and thinking, looking at my parents' drawers or whatever,
yeah.
or dresser, and I think to myself, like, somebody was looking in that while we weren't there.
Yeah, and did they come in my room and look in
yeah,
my room?
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
You know, why didn't they steal my stuff? Isn't it good enough for, you know, some cut-rate burglar?
My car was broken into as well when I worked in Chicago Ridge Mall.
Ooh. Look at you bragging.
At Foot Locker.
All right, listen.
And so I came off of work at 9:30 or whatever after, and I noticed my car had been broken into. The window was punched out. And I am a fan of indie rock,
yes.
you know, I guess at the time it was called college rock, yeah. you know, in the 90s. And then, so they took all of my, I had cassettes.
Oh, yeah.
And CDs and such.
Did you have
car.
The big black Case Logic case holding all your cassettes?
Right.
You have to. Gotta have that.
And
a giant suitcase of music.
So there was only a few cars left in the parking garage at this time, or the lot at this time, because it was after, you know, the mall had been closed and everybody's gone. So you could see my car, and then you saw a trail of cassettes through the parking lot. So I envisioned the person going, like, looking at the cassette thinking, oh, this is bad. Oh, my God, this is bad. Can't you believe? Oh, my God.
Who would listen to this? Why did I break into this car?
Running away, yeah.
Not one Nugent tape. This guy is horrible.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know why Nugent fans would be breaking into cars at Chicago Ridge Mall, but it just the first artist that popped into my mind. So did you go? I don't mean offense. I see you in your Foot Locker uniform going through the parking lot on your hands and knees, picking up
yeah.
and trying to cradle all your cassettes in your arms. And you're furious because your car was broken into, and you're hurt because your musical taste is not appreciated.
Yeah.
And there's a whole range of emotions going through your head.
Yeah.
And it's just, I just wanted to go home. I had my piece of Sparrow after work, and I just got to get out of here. And now this. And really, you don't like Echo and the Bunnymen? Screw you. Pete, that's horrifying. I'm sorry. Sorry you had to endure that. All right. Well, now we were talking to Gwen, and Gwen said she had been held up at gunpoint. And so she wasn't, she said she didn't have PTSD, but she was very hypervigilant. And I uttered a sentence that I thought really was going to make Pete's head explode because it, he whipped around and his eyes. So I said that I also had stared down the barrel of a gun. And, you know, there's story. Everybody has stories. Listen, everybody's done things. Now, this was not because I was a criminal. I was actually, when I was in college, between my junior and senior year, and right after I graduated, I came home and I was a bouncer at a big nightclub in the south suburbs. And it was, I guess a dance club would be, I was going to say disco, but it was not really, it's not there anymore. It was, it had some ties to nefarious organizations, let's say. But that really didn't have anything to do with this. We hosted a huge teen night on Mondays. And we'd get 300-400 kids in there. And it was kids from all over the area, and there was all, a mix of all ethnicities, everybody was in there. And some of the bouncers were not the smartest and not the best temperament with dealing with some teenagers. So I catch some kids smoking pot in the bathroom, and I'm throwing them out. And everything's going smooth because I've got them. We're walking out. There's not nobody's tussling. Everything's fine. I get them out to the door. And now when they get to the door, they turn around and they're going to get mouthy. And I'm just like, all right, let's go. And we're taking them out. And another bouncer who had nothing to do with any of this starts following me out. So now I get them out the front door and we're in the parking lot. And They're yelling because they're kids. Now they're yelling at me from the parking lot. I don't care. You're gone. I'm on the porch. I'm going right back in. Well, this guy comes out and he yells something really, really inappropriate. I'm like, oh boy. So he leave. They leave. They first there's a big hubbub about what this guy said, and I turn around. And I'm get the back in the So they leave. Well, then it's time to go, and everybody's emptying out in the parking lot. Now these kids have come back. And they get into an argument with another group of kids. And you've been in crowds where all of a sudden the crowd just parts and there's only a few people. So I start going over and the crowd parts. Well, the crowd parts because one of the kids pulled a gun and pointed it at the other kid. And honestly, I don't remember what I said. I said something because he turned and he's closer than you and I are, Pete. He pointed it right at me. Now, unbeknownst to me, my brother was coming to pick me up. So he was parked in the parking lot, and he sees this whole thing transpire. Kid pulls the gun at me, and I just freeze. And I know I said something to him, but I don't remember what. It was something in terms of like, hey, man, relax. And thankfully, I hadn't yelled anything at these kids. I had just gotten them out because they were smoking, but there was nobody. But it may have only been 5-10 seconds that he stood there with it pointed at me, but it seemed like forever. He backs up, gets in the car with his buddies, and they take off. Fast forward to the next night when the police come in. Well, the police came that night because we called them. Police come in the next night because about an hour after he pointed the gun at me, he found the kid he had been fighting and shot him. So this was it was scary. But to tie it up nicely, I'm shaking. As you can imagine, I'm not one of these guys. I don't have to put on false bravado. Yeah, it did scare me. It scared the hell out of me. So I'm still shaking after we talked to the cops. And, I'm scared for myself. I'm so angry at this other guy, I wanted to snap his head off. I go get in the car with my brother, and my brother is shaking too, because he's just seeing this. He's like, are you okay? I go, yeah. He goes, I got to tell you, this was the scariest thing I've ever seen. I can't believe it. He said, but you looked so cool. He said, because you just stood there, and yeah. You put your hands, you put your hands out, and he said, you looked so calm, like everything was fine. I go, yeah, I was not fine at all. So there's the gun in the face story.
Wow.
Yeah. Nothing that I would want to repeat ever.
So now you know you found out that this guy actually shot someone.
He did. He shot somebody less than an hour later.
Now, did you fear for yourself?
No.
Oh my God, this guy's going to come and find me because I kicked him out or the bouncer of this place.
Because the tossing him out was not my part in that was not what brought the gun back. The gun came out because he came back for whatever and was arguing with somebody else, one of the other kids at the club, or another group of kids. So, no, that part never even entered my mind that they were going to come back. And, you know, we had a lot of incidents like that where you're, you know, that's why, you know, when I was young and stupid and would go out, you know, I always kind of knew that these bouncers were never to be messed with. And I was not a badass bouncer. I was a guy who, you know, I was good at moving through a crowd. I was big enough where I could kind of get people. I could herd people away. I don't like fighting. I don't like, you know, I don't get off on that kind of thing. But it was a cool way to meet women and drink for free. And it was pretty close to the house. And for a summer job in college, it was all right. Once a gun gets pulled on you, you go, you know what, $10 an hour isn't worth it. I need to reevaluate my career choices. Here we are.
You worked in some nice places.
Listen, David, I am not...
You don't know what I mean.
I think I do.
Because when I was much younger, there was a club I used to go to in another state, and...
Did you have to go to another state to drink? They wouldn't let you drink here?
This is when I lived in another state.
Oh, okay. I was going to say,
you'd see the bouncers coming into work, and some of them, they would unload their hardware behind the bar, whether it was a baseball bat. What's that thing that cops used to have? It's a leather thing.
Oh, the sap.
Yeah, a sap. Or firearms.
Well, our head bouncer had a 9mm on him at all times, but he was up front taking the money too. So he was armed. Some of the other guys had the mag lights. Those were, you know, the big cop flashlights that weigh about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, those are the
ones that don't break if you hit someone with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can hit a car with it; it's not going to break. So a skull is nothing.
Yep.
So yeah, it's no. I mean, I did not carry any of those accoutrements for my. For my thing. But some of these guys that I worked with had been bouncing forever, and they would tell...
They didn't play.
No, and they would tell all these stories. And I was just this young, you know, 21-year-old kid, again, who was trying to meet girls and drink for free. I made no bones about it. And, you know, it worked out in those realms. But the...
I'm just amazed that you were so cool about it all.
On the outside, I must have looked it, but I honestly, this is not me bragging.
The inside,
I was
the heart
not,
is pumping
yeah,
like
I was,
crazy.
I was terrified that I was going to get shot. And it's one of those things that kind of runs through your mind where you're like, you can picture it, and I'm like, this is not where I want to end it. In a bright orange bouncer polo, you know, in front of my brother, three blocks from where I went to grade school and church. This is not...
I have one question.
Yes.
Did you get to that moment where the thought in your head is... Okay, I am not in charge here.
Oh, I knew I wasn't in charge.
And it's like, you know what, just see where this goes, because I have no idea right now.
Oh, no, the minute it started, I knew I wasn't in control. The gun has all the control, and the guy behind the gun has all the control. All right, let's do this. Then there's some more. It's WGN. All right, Pete, I think you've been, you're looking at me differently now. I don't know what it is. You have a different look. It's, I don't know, a little judgy, like maybe I've led too much of a checkered past. You know, not just the guy you thought I was.
Yeah, I'm just picturing you in that bouncer's outfit.
Sure, the big bouncer's outfit. That's how it would be. On the other side of the news, this is exciting, because I already know that Pete is taking umbrage with this. This is going to be a neighborhood throwdown, a block-by-block street throwdown for the best trick-or-treating block in Chicago. An article came out today that named a block, one block in one neighborhood, the best trick-or-treating block in Chicago. The street that people travel for miles and miles. They come by bus, by limo. They come from all over the Chicagoland area to trick-or-treat on this block. And I said to Pete, oh, I saw this story. I think this will be fun to talk about. He said, meh. I'm not happy about that. So we'll find out why he's not happy about that. We'll find out what makes a good trick-or-treating neighborhood. Do you live in one? Have you been to one? Do you leave your place of residence to travel to another place to trick-or-treat? And if you are a person whose neighborhood is traveled to, how do you feel about that? Because there's a lot of trick-or-treat etiquette that people adhere to, and sometimes that is not included. We'll do all that after the news, WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. It's Extension 720. Justin Kaufman will be back with you on Monday. We're here till 10. Then Jordan Burnfield comes in to take you up to 1 o'clock. All right. Halloween is Thursday. We are all very excited. Our house is locked and loaded with a lot of candy, with a lot of outdoor decorations, including some exterior inflatables. I know people, yes, I know people have mixed reactions about that. I put up this Frankenstein. I put them up now just out of longevity. We tried to figure it out the other night, and this inflatable Frankenstein we got when we bought our first house, when we had moved to California. This Frankenstein is now 18 years old, and he still inflates. I've changed the light bulbs in him, but he bears an uncanny resemblance to one of my friends. It's terrifying how much he looks like my buddy, to the fact where I send my friend this picture, and he's like, yes, I'm so honored to be in your yard every year. It's terrifying. So, yes, we're all ready to go. I've heard this is our first Halloween in the new house in this new neighborhood, and I've heard that our neighborhood gets pretty crowded because we are near a chocolate factory that opens up for Halloween. So from 3 to 6 on Halloween Day, you can go trick-or-treating at the chocolate factory, and I guess they just have tables set up in the driveways, and people come through and they fill up the bags. So my neighbors, when we first moved in, said, hey, and it's much like the neighbors in this story, which is why I'm telling you this. My neighbor said, get ready for Halloween because, one, make sure you can park in your garage or come home early and park in the street because so many people come to the chocolate factory that there's nowhere to park. Then when those kids are done at the chocolate factory, they come into the neighborhood and we literally are at the end of our block is a loading dock for the chocolate factory. So we're ground zero for chocolate annihilation on Thursday. And I can't wait for it. I love having kids come to the door for trick-or-treating. So I'm excited.
So obviously you've had Frankenstein,
yes,
for 18 years. So
yes.
So you've been a Halloween enthusiast.
I've always decorated the house. That was my biggest joy when we first bought a house, that I would be able to decorate for Christmas and Halloween and Thanksgiving. I put stuff out for same. I decorate for all the holidays.
Really?
I'm a goof. Yeah. Not quite Griswoldian in my efforts. However, I've gotten close a couple years. When we lived, the worst was when we lived in Frankfurt, because then it was, you know, everybody's competing. I actually won 1 year, Pete, and I don't mean to brag, but I've already told you that I've stared down death. I also won a home beautification award at Christmas time for my decorating.
Kudos.
Right. Thank you. I told you, I'm multifaceted. I've got so many stories. But now, at our last place was outlet challenged, to be kind. This was very Griswoldian. I had to run an extension cord. We had a back porch light. There were no outlets on the front of the house or the back. I don't know why there were no outlets anywhere on the outside of the house. So I had to get one of those, you'd screw out the light bulb and this would screw in and it had plugs on the outside, and then you'd screw the bulb in. So I had cords coming out of both sides of that down and then running them to the front of the house where they would plug into a multi-outlet outdoor receptacle for all these plugs. So I could plug in a lot of extension cords to the point where every time I turned on a light, I was terrified that the house was just going to blow up. So now I've got some, you know, I'm still running cords from the back, but I have a lot of outlets. So it works out. So I've got this ghoul that hangs from the trees that's about 15 years old. I'm cheap.
When do you see these start to come out?
I did it mid-October. So my stuff's been up for about, let's see, About 2 weeks, maybe.
And then how long do you keep it up after?
I will hopefully have it down by November 1st, by the end of November 1st. Yeah. I will unplug it definitely November 1st. Well, November 1st is Friday, so I'll have it down by the 2nd. I'll have it down by that weekend. Christmas, I will leave up. I'll put up, you know, not right after Thanksgiving, but close. The first really nice day after Thanksgiving, like every other house decorator in the land. Oh, it's going to be 50 today? Everything's going up. I don't care. And then... that I leave up, I leave up till after the new year, like January 7th. Sometimes when I used to go crazy at the old place and I would do trees in the backyard and trees in the front yard and trees on the parkway, at some point they're all frozen on the tree, so I just unplug everything and I take them down when everything thaws. Because the little Italian lights, the Italian twinkle lights, Clark, you can't see those if they're not plugged in. So.
How many trees are you running in the house?
We're going to cut down. We at one point in our life, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 full size, and 2 tabletops at our old, at the house in Frankfurt. Then our last house, this will be our first Christmas in this house too, obviously. We've downsized. Last year we had three full size, 2 tabletops, and a little pop-up.
Wow.
Yeah, it's insane. We have a problem, Pete. I'm not going to lie to you. There's issues there. But now, since we moved into a little smaller place, we've downsized, and the problem now becomes, well, we've donated or sold a lot of the Christmas stuff, but we still have 2 full-size trees. I don't know if they're both going to make it up. And then we have a little pop-up. And another table and the tabletop.
So all fake trees, no real.
Yes, the fake trees, because when I started my life of living on my own and decorating trees, I was on the road a lot. So I knew I had to get a fake tree so that my place didn't burn down. And so then it just became a matter of convenience. And I can't smell a real tree anyway. I have no sense of smell. So I can't smell if the tree. We would get some spray so that Debbie and Molly would be able to have that fresh cut tree, or we'd buy a wreath or an advent wreath, something where there'd be some fresh fronds in the house for them to smell. But yeah, to me, it's all about the shape of the tree and the lights and the decorations. So now we've got all this. But here's the point. The point of all of this. What's the point, Brian? I'll tell you after, because we've got to talk about the hottest block for trick-or-treating in Chicago. People are traveling from wherever. Make your plans now. Get there early. Where is it? I can't tell you right now. But trust me, I will tell you in 2 minutes on WGN. I am on the air. Jordan Bernfield is going to be here at 10, and yet he came in now to talk to me. No comprehension of the clock. Trying to sabotage this program to make his program look better. I don't think it's going to work, but good luck, Jordan. All right, let me tell you, you need to catch Healthy Living Chicago this Saturday at 9 a.m. You'll learn about the struggles and successes of everyday Chicagoans with health and fitness. Living Healthy, Saturday at 9 a.m. on WGN-TV. Boy, I hope the new bosses weren't late. That was the one flaw in the program. Everything, Pete, you keep this ship on course, everything had been good, and then you let somebody wander into the studio. And I don't know why I threw you under the bus. You're not out there. You're not a security guard. You're not wearing a bouncer polo hoping nobody pulls a gun on you. You're working hard in the production booth. But suddenly I felt threatened. I panicked. I'm sorry. I panicked. I threw you under the bus. All right. You know what else? You know what I panic about? Not being the good house. I want to be the good house. Not going to happen. The best block for trick-or-treating, much to Pete's chagrin, is in Logan Square. That's right. It is Bernard Street on Halloween night. And not just that, not every block of Bernard Street. The 24 and 2500 blocks of Bernard Street. Roger Badish has walked in. Have you heard of this street, Roger?
No, I have not.
Well, listen up, because it's one of the city's hottest destinations for trick-or-treating, which is a sentence that never really should ever be uttered. We don't need a hot destination for trick-or-treating. This is not Sunda or, some trendy nightclub. These are kids begging for candy. If you give them one fun-size Milky Way, you win, they win. Everybody's happy. But no, now we need destination trick-or-treating. And trust me, I'm thinking of getting a cab and going up there. Kids and parents, according to this article on Block Club Chicago, travel from across the city, sometimes by bus and limo.
Oh, my God.
That's another sentence that never really needed to be said. If you're... can I say this with all judgment added in? If you take a limo to take your kids trick-or-treating, you're a horrible human being. You truly need to reevaluate your priorities. There are starving children in Africa who don't get candy. And you're going to limo because you don't like the fact that your neighbors, where you live, it's not quite as fancy. You know, it's like trying to get your kid into a magnet school because the school down the block is not up to par. That's a horrible analogy, but I'm going to stick with it because I already said it. But the point is, it's the grass is always greener.
Yeah.
All right, so neighbors here, one neighbor, this is a new guy. He's been in the neighborhood for a couple years. First year, he only brought between 100 and 200 pieces of candy.
Seems logical.
No. Oh. This year, they're going to do at least 2,000, and he said that might not be remotely enough. Oh. 2,000 pieces of candy. Now, I will say, because of the aforementioned chocolate factory, I bought, let's see.
Uh-oh.
I've got about 1,200. Well, it started out about 1,300 pieces of candy. Mm-hmm. Now it's probably down to about 1,000. But that's Debbie opened the bag. Once she opened the bag, she broke the seal.
Okay.
One guy hires neighborhood kids to pass out the candy because it's too much work. He's got too many people coming. Other neighbors said that they have people come over and they answer the door in shifts so that they can go to the bathroom because it's that much of a crush. It's unbelievable. First of all, that sounds horrific.
Yes.
Just to take your kids there, it sounds like a nightmare. But a lot of the houses do a lot of decorating. Everybody's there. There's people who jump out of bushes. It's a whole big thing.
Do they explain why it becomes so crowded? Are they giving out full-size candy?
No, they don't.
Oh.
They don't give out full-size candy because they said that would be too expensive. However, they are sneaky. They all have side buckets. Side buckets for the kids who actually live on that street.
It's kind of like the secret menu at McDonald's or something.
So if you don't live on the street, you don't know about the side bucket unless you're listening to this program or you're reading the article in Block Club. Because now they gave that all up. So that is the kids will come to the door and say, can I get the special candy? I live on the street.
Do they have to have ID?
I don't think so.
Oh.
But maybe their parents do. It has been a trick-or-treating destination since the late 80s. According to one of the neighbors, they said, what happened was one of our neighbors had their kids in a school in Lincoln Park, and they couldn't go trick-or-treating because they lived in an apartment building. So they had a party here and said, bring your kids over and you can trick-or-treat in our area because it's safe. It caught on from there. So Logan Boulevard is also a busy destination for trick-or-treaters, but Bernard is only 2 blocks long, so it's safe and contained. And they also say another reason is the street is lined with historic homes dating back to the founding of Logan Square. They're set back from the street, so there's more elaborate decorating, all of that. Now, I saw this story, and Pete saw this story, and Pete took umbrage because he said, listen, I don't live in this neighborhood. I live in a different neighborhood, and our neighborhood is better.
Edgewater.
And what makes trick-or-treating in Edgewater that much better?
I shouldn't say better because I haven't been to Bernard Street.
Say it. Cast aspersions.
But it's not going trick-or-treating. It's going to an amusement park.
Ooh.
Every single house on a few blocks in this little three-block section of Edgewater Glen, technically.
Ooh.
It's a fancy.
It sounds very fancy, yeah. Edgewater Glen.
Every house is decorated to the hilt. Every kid from every neighborhood around the north side comes to these three blocks, and it's just a parade, and it seeps over into our section, the wrong side of the tracks of Edgewater.
Edgewater Heights.
And I've never seen anything like it, because last year was our first year, and I was like, well, next year we're going to really have to pick this up and get decorations.
So did you decorate?
No, we didn't. We got a couple pumpkins. But it is just a crazy.
Do you give out toothbrushes too? Are you that house?
Really?
No, one pumpkin and here you go, kid. Dental hygiene is key.
What basically it boils down to is parents with some sort of wagon filled with liquor.
Sure.
Follows the adults.
It's like a party.
We used to give out those chocolates filled with liquor. For the parents, if they wanted something.
Yeah,
some
nice.
Of the other houses had Jell-O shots back at the old place. Now I'm just, listen, No, you bring your. If you want booze, you got an issue. Bring your own. But it's BYOTT. Bring your own trick or treating booze. But I left off a B.
So I don't want to cast dispersions over.
Edgewater is not to be shunned.
Right.
Edgewater
exactly.
needs a little of the
yeah.
light shone upon it
right.
for its fine trick or treating ability. All right, we've got somebody who lives, Myra, actually lives on Barnard. She's lived there for 25 years. Hello, Myra.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am well. Are you hearing accurate things about your street? Is it as crazy as it sounds?
Yes, absolutely. And I was actually sorry to hear you mention our street name, because we already have, there's usually several thousand people who come
Whoa.
To the street on Halloween. And I'm not joking.
No, that's what it said.
Yeah, it's a real event. We couldn't believe it when we were here for our first Halloween, which is a couple decades ago. At that time, there would be like 1,000 people coming.
Wow.
We have an engineer who lives on the street who concocts these special events on his lawn. Last year, I believe they had somebody getting electrocuted, and there was the screaming and the lights. And he goes all out with all his technical prowess, and it's pretty
incredible.
Is
his name Nelson Gonzalez? Because he is talked about in the article. He's an electrical engineer, yes. So Nelson's house is getting fact-checked as well. So, wow, Myra, so how much candy do you buy? Or do you turn off the lights and hide? You can't really.
One year I bought $400 worth of candy, and we ran out by 8 o'clock, and they come. They come until 10 or 11, sometimes 12.
How early do they start? Right after school?
Yeah, we get a lot of little kids around 3:30, 4 o'clock, and they're adorable. But the crush really starts about 5:36.
Well, Myra, I appreciate. I got to get to the news, but I appreciate you calling and telling us that we are not crazy, that this is all true. Happy Halloween. Let's do this. It is news time, WGN. All right. On the other side of news, we'll talk a little more Halloween. We've got some haunted house recommendations. But I also want to talk, since we were talking to Myra about Barnard Street and how all these thousands of people were coming there, I'm wondering if you're one of these people who travel to another neighborhood and why. I can understand why some people might. And if you live in these neighborhoods, does it bother you at all that people come to your neighborhood that don't live there? Do you have a side bucket for kids who just live in your neighborhood? We'll talk a little bit more Halloween. On the other side now, it's time for the news. It is Brian Noonan in for Justin Kaufman on Extension 720. We've been talking about all kinds of things this evening. Hopefully you've been with us. We're talking about trick-or-treating now, mostly trick-or-treating on two particular blocks of Barnard Street in Logan Square, which, according to Block Club Chicago, is the hottest Halloween block in Chicago. Now, people are saying, well, I don't know about that. Pete claims Edgewood, very nice. I can report back next week, because I'm on next Friday at from 10 to 1. I can tell you if the hype of my new neighborhood lives up to it. Because, again, I think we're cheating because we have a chocolate factory. So, yeah, you know, if Willy Wonka lives at the end of your block, you're probably going to get more traffic. So, you know, the decision will have to be weighted accordingly. I'll leave that to you to judge. But for me, I'm anticipating a lot of traffic. So we'll see. But they also said, according to this story, that a lot of people travel. And our caller, Myra, who lives on Barnard Street, said, yes, people come in. They come in, by the thousands. Because it's a two-block stretch. 2,000 people don't live on that two-block stretch. But they're coming in. They're coming in by bus. When I was younger, we lived in California, back when Molly was a little kid, we lived in a flat neighborhood. Meaning we were at the base of the hills in Santa Clarita, where unfortunately the fires are ravaging that area. And it's horrible to see the news footage because I'm like, I know that area. I lived in that area. But anyway, it's a lot of hills and a lot of foothills and mountains and things. So our neighborhood was flat, which made it a destination. I don't know if it was the hottest Halloween destination in the Santa Clarita Valley, but it was a pretty good place. And we would get we would get loads of people coming in. They would come in from the San Fernando Valley. They would come from other parts of the Santa Clarita Valley. And they were trick-or-treating in the neighborhood. And one year, the first year, I was like, that's kind of, it kind of sucks, all these people coming in. They don't live in our neighborhood. And then I went, who cares? You're buying the same amount of candy. Who cares who gets it? And so now it doesn't bother me. And when we were when we lived at other houses, people would come. I don't know where they're from. The only time you know where they're coming from, like you recognize the kids on your block. And I had a version of the side bucket, but it was mostly for older kids and little kids. There were some things that I would just give to the little kids. You know, if you're a toddler, you don't need a full-size candy bar. And if I know you, you know, you're a little something for the effort, just for being nice and not torching my house. But you would see cars come in, and it's funny watching, you know, if you didn't know what it was, if it wasn't Halloween night, you'd think, boy, there's a lot of stalkers in this neighborhood, a lot of, you know, stranger dangers following groups of kids in the car. But so that's how you know. I don't care, you know. But we never had thousands and thousands of people coming to our block. So I don't know. One of the texters said, rumor was when Jordan lived in Highland Park, he gave out full-size candy bars, and there was a long line of trick-or-treaters. Make me wonder if it was true, because was Halloween justification to open the 23 gates and let anyone on the property? Do any WGN listeners know if that's true? And any truth to the rumor that Sammy gave out corked Snickers? That's funny. But yeah, I don't know. If you live in Highland Park, did you ever go trick-or-treating in Michael Jordan's house? I would imagine if they do give it out, there's somebody down at the gates. You're not coming up to the house. You may come to the driveway,
And
there's somebody there, you know, who has no connection to Michael Jordan other than he's on the payroll to pass out candy that day, and they're giving out the candy. But yeah, if you're Michael Jordan and you can't give out full-size candy bars, nobody should be giving out full-size candy bars.
Now, Brian, do you feel like now you're in this new, your brand new neighborhood?
Yes.
Do you feel like you need to impress?
I've already impressed with my outdoor decor. I'm going to say it, Pete. I've got the best house on the block decoration-wise. I put some effort into it. It's a good combination of spooky, which I believe Halloween has to be. I'm not for this friendly, everything is jovial mm-hmm. Halloween. That's Christmas time. Halloween should be a little scary, but I have a couple of touches that are younger kid friendly, where you'd go, oh, there's Snoopy coming out of a jack-o'-lantern right next to a hanging zombie on a cross. So it balances out, I think, nicely. I thought of that because I'm insecure that way and I need approval from strangers who I'll never talk to. And I thought, but then I went, no, this is nuts. Now, I'm also not the guy who gives one fun-size bar. You get a few pieces. You know. I'll toss a few in the bag. I'm not going, here's one fun-sized mm-hmm. Twix, because there is no fun in that size. It's like,
well, when you give your candy out, are you dressed up as well, or are you just in regular clothes?
It depends. It depends on the... I'll usually have something Halloween-related on, whether it's a costume. Like last year, I subbed during the day, and we had school... everybody at school wore a costume, so I had a clown costume on. And I wore that when I passed out candy for a while. Sometimes it'll just be like a pumpkin T-shirt or some sort of T-shirt like that. So there's something Halloween
you're in the
related. Yeah. And the kids... I think the kids appreciate it. But I've also this year decided I'm not going to hound them to say trick-or-treat, because there's been a lot of press about kids who were... verbally challenged, or maybe on the spectrum, they don't like to talk. They have anxiety, whatever it is. And I used to, everybody got candy when they came to the house. But I also used to, if a kid just held his bag out and he was old enough, not a baby, but you know, if you're six and up, I would say you got to say it. And then most of them would say trick or treat. Some would just stare at me, and then I'd panic, and I'd just give them extra candy because I was like, this exchange is taking way too long. This was a really quick give and take. You come up, and I send you on your way happy. Now it's turned into a thing, and they're turning around and staring at their parents who are on the sidewalk, and the parents are like, what are you doing, weirdo? Give the kid a Snickers bar and let me get out of here. I've been walking all day. I got a wagon full of booze. I gotta move. So I'm like, no, okay. I panic. So they just come up. They say hello. Now if they don't say anything, I'll give them the candy, but I hope they know I'm flipping them off as they walk away from the house. It's subtly behind the back as I turn around. They're getting a little something. No, it's I really enjoy it. I also don't care anymore if the teenagers come to the door. Again, maybe it's because I don't think I'm mellowing. I think it's the opposite. I'm not mellowing. I'm looking out for my property. Because if 16-year-olds come to my door for some candy, one, they're not out committing crimes. Maybe they get jacked up on sugar and do something later, but that's not my responsibility.
Do the older people have to be dressed up, or if they're just in their after school, jeans and t-shirt, 16-year-old?
It's a point that I've debated over the last couple years. And this is the conclusion I've come to. Usually those kids come and there's a group. And one or two of them will have something on. Whether it's a mask, they'll have something. One or two have made an effort. The rest are hangers on. They're out together as a group. And most of the time, if you just say hello, those kids I always make say it. They have to say it. I'll give them the candy. They'll say thanks, and they move on. Because they know, I'm sure they get to houses, and there's people who give them a hard time. And, you know, there is a point where you should stop trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not their parents. I'm not the cops. I'm a guy who doesn't want his house trashed. And really, I've opened the bag. It's not like I have to. It's not like I'm going to the drawer to get them cash. The candy's sitting right there. I want it out of the house. So here, take it. I don't care.
There's the classic Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where Larry David is he answers.
Did he give anybody candy?
Well, a group of young kids came up. They weren't dressed up, and he had a problem with it. And the next thing,
what a surprise!
And I can't remember if he gave him the candy or didn't, but he was, you know, hassling the kids about it. And then the next thing you know, his house is all, you know, TP'd and stuff like that. And
see,
he's like, it's not a salt or treat, you know.
That's the trick.
It's a great episode.
I'll have to go. I know I've seen it. I'll have to go back and watch it because it does make sense. And listen, at some point, I don't know what this kid's home life. If a couple pieces of candy makes them happy, I don't care. You know, it's I'm having fun. If they come now, there is a point where I look at. I don't know what the trick or treat time is for the city. I'll look that up by the end of the week, and then I'll give it like a half hour leeway after that. But say trick or treating ends at 8 o'clock. At 8:30, I'm turning off the light and closing the door.
Mm-hmm.
That's I've done my bit. We're cool. If you can't get out, then you know. You're out of luck. Remember you several years ago when you told the story of trick-or-treating when you were dressed as a polar bear, and you spoke of them doing their polar bear business. Oh, I don't remember that story. I used to be funny, Pete. All right. You want to, Roger, you know, yes. I like a sad holiday story.
Yes, I do.
You want this sad? You want my saddest trick-or-treating story?
I would love it.
All right. Well, let's do this, and then we will come back, and I will wrap things up with the saddest trick-or-treat story ever. Do kids really trick-or-treat anymore? Yes. Where do you live? A senior center? Yes. Kids do come trick-or-treating. You know what? I bought a ton of candy last year. We had about five kids who showed up at the door. Not sure we will ever try it. There are neighborhoods that don't get a lot of traffic.
Our neighborhood.
There are some blocks in a neighborhood that don't get a lot of traffic.
Right.
And then with all the towns doing a lot of the trunk or treat or the church things or the things like that, it may have cut down. There are still places that get a lot of kids. So we'll see. All right, let's do this. Then I'll share that. I'll share the
saddest Halloween ever.
Yeah, and it goes along with all my sad holiday tales. And again, 100% true. All right, we were talking about trick-or-treating stories, and somebody texted in a story I told. I remembered that it was talking about some neighbors who were dressed as polar bears. But I was requested to share the sad trick-or-treat story. So I was in about, this is a fourth or fifth grade, so kind of the same age you were when your house was burgled, so a traumatic time in all our lives, Pete. And I had gotten in trouble for throwing dirt clods at school. I went to a Catholic school, and they were building a church, so there was a construction site. There was a lot of dirt. So I got in trouble for throwing dirt on the playground at recess one day. And my parents told me, you know, you can't do this again. If you do it again, you're not gonna be able to go trick or treating. You're gonna get in trouble. And so, well, I did it again, but I didn't get caught. This was the thing. This second time I just did it, I didn't get caught. And I went home, and my dad said, did you throw dirt clods today? And I told the truth. I said, yes. He said, well, you know what that means? You're not going trick-or-treating. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, we told you. You're not going trick-or-treating. So Halloween comes. I have a costume and everything. And I couldn't go. And I had to sit in the living room and watch my brothers go out and go trick-or-treating and my parents giving out the candy, and I had to sit in the living room and watch these kids go trick-or-treating. Now, the only saving thing was we were going to my grandfather's house the next day, and they were going to do like a Halloween for us that day. So my parents let me wear my costume the next day, and I took this is back when it was brown paper bags at the grocery store, and I decorated it for Halloween, and I got some candy and stuff from my grandfather the next day. But on Halloween, I sat on the couch, same couch, same window, same everything, that my mom is still living in that house. And I sat there, and I used to tell a joke about it, and I would say, what am I going to tell people? They tell them you're dressed as a bad boy, because that was it. But it was the most horrible thing.
So when trick-or-treating's over and the rest of your family comes back from trick-or-treating, they don't share anything when they're, you put everything on the table and you go through what's good and what's bad.
Well, I was the oldest, so I was able to get some candy from my younger brothers. Right. But it was the fact that I had to sit there and almost monitor the rest of the trick-or-treating. It was, but I've told the story before about not getting an Easter basket while my brothers did. Again, Pete, you're learning a lot about me in a short amount of time. I've cheated death. I love inflatable outdoor decorations. I've had crazy punishments as a child. It all does. Do things seem to make more sense now?
Well, yes, because I am a Christmas enthusiast.
Oh, very nice. Yes, you do. You and your lovely wife do a holiday podcast.
Yeah, we
right?
do. The first Hallmark Christmas movie debuts tonight. As
oh, is that right?
Yeah.
All right.
And I always kind of look back to something in my youth that, I don't know, like, why do I like Christmas so much now? I can't really figure it out. This is all for the therapist.
Yes.
But perhaps, like, your love of Halloween maybe comes from this one time where you couldn't trick or treat. So now you are going overboard.
Maybe. That could be. And it's funny because Christmas is kind of the same. A couple of my brothers embrace Christmas, not as much as I do. And a couple of them want nothing to do with it. And, you know, you look back and you go, all right, well, there were five of us and my mom and dad. And, you know, sometimes things were a little hectic and maybe that's why they don't like Christmas or whatever. Or maybe that's why we do like Christmas. I don't know. Like you said, there's people who spend a lot of time and money in school so we can lay on a couch somewhere and go, I don't know why I wanted three Christmas trees. Everything was fine back in there. And then you go, yeah, okay. Well, I don't know what your problem is. And that's always the worst. When a therapist shakes her head and goes, yeah, you're beyond hope. I don't know. Why don't you just have some eggnog and shut up and go plug in your 18-year-old Frankenstein and give out candy. That's how it should be. So, I don't know. Is Jordan coming in? I see him out there. He's talking to everybody. He came in. Here's the thing about Jordan Bernfield. He comes in when he's not supposed to. And then when he's supposed to, he doesn't come in at all. You know, well, we don't want him in here. Oh, man, he's in here. He's yakking it up. Doing all kinds of things. Then it's like, hey, Jordan's coming in. And
I was yakking. I know. This is like a family reunion.
Yeah, I know it is. That's why I was surprised you weren't coming in.
Oh, I know. Well,
to say hello.
Well, I want to say hello to you, and then I'm talking to Mike, who's producing me tonight.
Michael Heidemann, and we love talking to Michael Heidemann. Dan Long's
and Dan
in there.
Dan and Pete and everybody.
Everybody's
and so
here.
It's like, yeah, these are my people.
You know what, though?
You're my people.
You're going to have 3 hours to talk to them.
That's true.
I've only got like another 2 minutes.
I know.
Because I'm done talking.
Can I just say, though, when I was driving over here and I heard that you were on, I was so happy because I was going to get to see you tonight.
It is very good to see you. I haven't seen you in a while. This is a nice homecoming for you. I was very pleasantly surprised to hear you were coming in.
I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised every time I get to come in at this point. But it's good. No, it's really good being back. And, You know, it's great to, you know, because you and I got to do all these weird shifts together.
We did. Is it nice to not have to talk baseball all the time?
Yes.
I mean, I know you like to talk sports and baseball.
Yes. So tonight we're doing a lot of music talk. I'm interviewing two musicians on the show tonight. We are going to squeeze in some sports, too. We're
going to
do some Bears with that dog. But, yeah, we're I do like that you get sort of a blank canvas.
Yeah.
Because in previous stops in my career, you know, I would have
to... You were the sports guy.
Well, yes, but also you just have to pontificate about certain things in a narrow scope of topics that I don't real... I mean, like, I didn't get to watch the Bulls game tonight, but I'm really not that upset about it.
You don't care
I don't care.
At some point. And also, you're... Like, tonight you'll talk about all different kinds of topics.
Yeah.
And you will get comments from all different kinds of people who care about all different kinds of topics, rather than... And I'll tell you another thing about Kubinski. He better shut up and go home.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I feel like there's only one thing to say right now about Mitch Trubisky. He's bad.
He is bad.
Like, that's pretty much the conversation.
The I didn't get to it. Did you see the piece in the Sun-Times today saying we should be sympathetic toward Mitch Trubisky?
Well,
do we need to show it? He needs sympathy. He was booed when he was first signed. A kid got booed the other day at the Hawks game for saying he was going to be Trubisky for Halloween. So maybe we all need to lighten up.
You know what the funny thing about that, though, is, like, Cutler got destroyed in this city.
Right.
But the difference was Cutler was like, you know, the smoking Jay, like, I don't care.
He doesn't care.
It's fine. So maybe Mitch needs to pull something out of the Jay playbook here.
Well, we will be listening tonight. It is great to see you. Welcome back. I'm glad you are here.
Yeah.
So we'll be listening. Jordan Bernfield coming up after the news. Thank you for listening tonight. Thank you for being part of the program. Pete, thank you. It was a pleasure. I'm glad this time you didn't have enough notice to bail. I'm very, very excited about that. It was exciting. So it's news time, WGN.